Okay. I'm in Nashville. Wait a minute. Hold on. What name are we calling you? What do we call?
Lemmy's fine.
Lemmy Hayes.
Yeah.
Okay, just want to be clear.
I want
you to be happy.
We can make it like I'm being booked. Like, are there any other aliases you may go by?
Okay.
Lemuel. Thieving, credit-stealing man.
I'm in Nashville with Lemmy Hayes, a.k.a. You ever see JFK? You remember that? Tommy Lee Jones?
Oh, yeah.
Any aliases? Clay Shaw. Clay Bertrand.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Do you have any aliases, Lemmy Hayes?
I was thinking the Ron White thing for aliases, where they ask him and he was drunk and he says tater salad, and that's the whole bit for him.
Ron White.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
It's a good one.
That guy,
you know, household icon, I guess, in the blue collar comedy.
I was going to say, it's really a geographical thing, isn't it? Because it's like, I guess I'm more of an Andrew Dice Clay kind of guy. See what I mean?
Yeah.
He wasn't very big down in, you know.
No. Ron White, though, both.
Ron White big, was.
Both physically big, imposing figure, quite a large man.
Cigar, whiskey,
but also
yeah.
Actually just broad, tall.
But I'm saying it, but like, I'm trying to just visualize, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Like, sort of the Ric Flair tribe. Facially?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sans some of the face paint, but yes.
Right.
Got that.
The Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair tribe.
Yeah, looks like he could just, you know, probably kill a weaker man with a chest chop.
Yeah. But it always with the cigar and the whiskey, though, definitely.
Of course.
That guy. I know the guy.
You got to set the mood.
I know the guy. Lemmy. Now, first of all, we just met for the first time yesterday, in person.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
But I don't know. I didn't look back in the records. Like, known each other for...
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was the Jimmy Paxson episode was the first one I listened to. And I think I just, you know, said, short time listener.
Right. That would have been number two, by the way.
Yeah,
episode number two.
Yeah. Jimmy, another one that I like only met very briefly. Don't really, but we're internet friends and.
Right. Was he on tour? That kind of thing coming through.
I think so. I honestly don't remember. It's been so long.
But also, hold on a second. Where are you from?
I'm from Athens, Georgia.
See, you're another Athens, Georgia guy. Who did I just talk to? Athens, Georgia. Shit. Oh, Keo.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keo, I didn't know though. He moved probably a solid 10 years before I did. So I mean, I was still too busy being an idiot.
Oh, but this is what I'm trying to get at. We'll get to the idiot part. Like, we'll get to that. But I meant the when we were first in touch, you were not living here. So we
correct.
Were in Athens,
correct.
Georgia.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, was that your, are you in that scene? Because I know there's a scene there. We all, there's a scene, but what is that scene? What is that?
Well, I would say I'm not. I still have so many friends that are there, but I'm not in it in terms of any kind of real way. And I probably haven't been for at least 4 years or so. It's, at this point, there are some, larger acts that are still have moved there. What's his name from Cracker lives there. The main guy. And so a lot of the, now the hired guns are from our Athens guys. And my friend Jeremy Wheatley plays drums on that gig a lot. And I'm trying to think of who else. I mean, Up Montreal's still there, the main guy. And outside of that, but the history is REM, B-52s, Love Tractor, that kind of situation, Barbecue Killers, that early 80s post-punk era.
Does it have to be college rock, as we used to call it? Does it have to be that kind of thing?
It ends up being that, because it's outside the university, there's not a lot of industry. So that is the draw. And it has an incredibly strong art program, and always has. And so that is kind of the thing that threads through it. It is a very blue dot in a sea of red.
Right. No, I'm saying, but even the music has to be sort of arty and kind of,
yeah, it permeates the whole, the art thing permeates the entire city.
Right.
In that way. The only thing that eclipses it is the football thing. because UGA is just long time.
It's a Friday night lights kind of town.
Saturday night lights for college football, but yes, yes. I mean,
you brought up college football yesterday. What was it?
Roll Tide.
And it's a Jerry Rowe. He likes to just misuse Roll Tide.
Yes, exactly.
And you looked at me, and I'm going like, yeah, I don't know.
Come on, man.
It's like detergent. I don't follow. Yeah.
Steely Dan made the reference in their hit Deacon Blues.
See, another band, always too slick. Too clean, too slick. Look at that. We're just talking about using record, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was having the discussion about that after the Jerome Dupree was in town the other day, and we have a mutual friend. I've never met him, but we went to dinner, and he was like, yeah, after Royal Scam, man, it just was too polished. I wasn't into it. And, I mean, I get it.
Never
mind. It definitely got like more... Not on the grid, because that really wasn't a thing, but we were paving that road, it feels like, in a lot of ways.
Just squeaky clean. Just,
five-star hotel kind of squeaky.
Yeah, just, I don't know. I don't like it. I mean, I like a clean bathroom in a good hotel. I like that, but not, you know.
She'll get lucky at a Red Roof Inn.
That's what I'm saying, brother. That's what I'm saying, bro. How can she get... You know what I mean? Come on. It's just not... I mean, you know. But then again, you know, it's like, again, it's like Ron White or Dice. I mean, more of a Ramones kind of, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Keep it dirty. I like it. Mm-hmm. I want to hear a little fuzz. I want to hear a little, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, all right, so Athens, Georgia, you're in the scene, though. You were playing there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a small pond, but playing a lot. You could play every night there.
Yeah.
And you can make $0.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really kind of where it was all one of those like really stratified situations, and not because anybody was gatekeeping or anything like that. That's just sort of how it was. You had the people that had been successful and maybe stayed around, and they would get these larger gigs that paid a lot, and they could pay you, and you'd get that. And then you had all the like art stuff, which paid basically nothing. But I mean, I got to do a lot of things. Through that, I cut my touring teeth through all of that, both in America and abroad, which was cool. I didn't necessarily make a lot of money doing it, if any money doing it, but it was still an experience, and I got a lot of work experience and on-the-job experience. Maybe I stuck around there a little too long, but I had a good time, and I have a lot of great friends that I met there, and some of them are still there. Some of them have moved away themselves to do other things. And most of them, you know, very few of them probably still doing the music thing to the degree they were there. But there's a few expats from Athens here that were in the scene the same time I was. Not a lot, but there's a few.
Right.
So, but it's still pretty active. I mean, it lost a couple venues in the pandemic, which is... for a town that's as small as it is, that's pretty heavy hit.
It was a small price to pay, Lemmy.
For us to survive.
We had to save lives. And, you know, but look at Jeff Bezos. He looks good, doesn't he? Isn't he looking buff and good, and he's just happy?
Mm-hmm. Plastic.
So, really, there's no losers.
There's no losers.
Let's not, we don't talk about that.
No, he gives us his loving gaze.
We don't talk about what got lost musically in the pandemic, you know what I mean? Because look how much was saved.
It's true, you know. Those were the Frodo Baggins of the pandemic, basically.
Hey man, you know, everyone did what they had to do, Len.
That's right.
So, all right, so you got out though. The bottom line is you said, that's enough, ceiling is too low here.
Yeah. I was playing with this band White Violet. The main guy had a deal with Normal Town Records, which is an imprint of New West.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to move here. I moved here with him. And then he was here for a few years and got married, got a job offer being an engineer at a studio in Georgia, and he did that. And his wife has a job that was great in Atlanta. So it made sense for them to like do that thing. And now he's at, I believe he's still at the recording school in Athens that opened up. But yeah, and then I stuck around. I was here maybe 10 months, 11 months, and then I fractured my right humerus, and that was fun. So.
What was that again? How did you do that?
I was just running. Fell and the...
Running like for exercise?
No, I was jaywalking, truthfully. And
let me.
And
Car was coming.
Yep.
Uh-oh, pick it up.
Yep, and then just ate shit on the other side of the sidewalk. Orthopedic surgeon puts the x-ray in. He's like, oh, you're running, and you tucked your wrist in. All the weight went on that arm. It's the only way you can break it like that. And I was like, yeah.
Like holding it up.
I did, yeah, you just, you know.
Right.
Like you're going to flex, but not.
Yeah, and he's then, holding up the, exactly like yeah. he's going to.
And then.
Like he's raised the dumbbells up to the yeah. shoulder. Yeah.
Full curl.
Yeah, full curl.
And then, yeah, it broke. So I got a plate and 11 pins in my arm. It was an amazing $10,000 excursion into depression and eating out every day for every meal because you can't use your right hand.
Right.
It was cool. It was a right. cool time.
Right. Right.
A lot of perspective, though, both for life, but also, you know, you don't, you have this history of being able to play your instrument and doing things and recording and playing gigs, and then you can't. So then you're just listening and you're like, well, I may as well use this time to listen insanely intently. So it was informative in that way. But then, you know, the PT comes back. I went to Vanderbilt for PT and they were really great. They knew what I did for a living and were like, you should start playing as soon as, like, once we start PT, we want you to start playing. But as soon as you get tired, stop. And then just do that every day. And that'll be part of your physical therapy. So it was cool, and they were really great and kept an eye on it, and my surgeon was awesome, and he did a fine job, I guess. I don't really have any issues, so I'm going to say that he did a bang-up job. I just have a big scar, and there's a point on my arm where you can touch both bone and plate under the skin if you want.
Sexy, baby.
Get, like, you know, real creeped out.
Well, you know, I can... Don't worry, I got you. I got you. I mean, you know, what are you going to do, man? You know what I mean? I mean, shit happens. And, I mean...
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
Shit happens, bro.
That's true. That's true. Life happens.
Life does. Life happens, man. But, you know... by the way, how long was that you were, like...
I was...
Out of commission and all that?
I broke it on in January of that year, mid-January. And then the surgery happened a week later, just because of different things that happened in that process. And then I don't think I played... I didn't play my first gig, real gig, with no wrist brace or anything until September. I did one gig in the interim because right after it happened, my buddy called and he had been playing with this artist. She said she wasn't going to do anything for the rest of the year. And so he took this other gig that was going to keep him busy. And then she got offered this pretty great gig opening for Pixies in Indianapolis. And he was like, you think you'll be good by the end of June? And I was like, yeah. And the arm itself had...
When is this again?
This was... He called me in February.
February, gotcha.
And so gotcha. The bone itself had healed. But the problem is anytime you break your humerus and they put a plate in it, whether they put it in one of two places, mm-hmm. and no matter how they do it, they have to either move your radial nerve or your ulnar nerve. And when they do that, everything from the point at which they move it stops working and it has to repair itself. And it takes nerves repair at about an inch a month on average. So it's about a 6-month thing to get down to here. So that part got kind of glossed over in the discussion with the surgery. And I think they were just hoping for... Oh, it'll be really fast. And so I was still in that mindset. And so I was like, yeah, man, I'll be good by June. Luckily, there were no shuffles involved or anything like that. It was just bang out some eighth notes. So yeah. I bought a carpal or like a brace you'd use for skating, like roller skating. And I just gaff taped it.
Right.
And I could squeeze. I couldn't open my hand, but I could squeeze my hand. So I just...
Taped the stick to the hand.
I just...
I've heard of this. There was a guy... I can't remember that story, but go ahead. There's a guy, right? There's a famous... I just can't... Was it Keith Moon? I don't know. Yes. Something like that.
Somebody did the same shit, I'm sure. The tape,
yeah.
There's no way I'm the first guy. And I just played the gig, and it was really awkward because I had to shake everyone's hand. They put their right hand out, but I... would just reach over.
I was getting a text from Rick Allen. Shut up, bitch. Man up, bitch.
Man up, bitch.
Take your skirt off. I'm listening.
I'll send you a T-top and you'll know real suffering.
So Def Leppard, yeah, apparently he's not having it.
No.
Rick Allen ain't having his story anymore. The sob story ain't working for Rick Allen, bro.
No,
like, you're like, I had to do this. I had to tape my hand.
Yeah, I got a lot of Rick Allen jokes.
Well, We don't use them here.
That's true.
How do you get them out of a tree? Come on. What's the answer? How do you get Rick Allen out of a tree? Come on. You wave. Now listen. Now listen. For real, though. Like, just start to finish. That happened. This happened in February?
January.
January. So yeah. When were you, like, back?
I would say that I was back, and I could do any gig without sweating it by that November.
Okay.
I did a tour.
Less than a year.
Less than a year, but more than for more.
A gestation period.
Yes.
That's a hard
one.
Yes,
my child.
By the way.
This is my child.
Well, that's not, dude, you gave birth. I mean, there you go. You that's kind true. Of, you know, conceived and it's like, it's a whole thing.
I conceived.
Well, it is. It's a, this is a massive thing. That's like someone talking about their child. It's a big deal, you know?
Yeah, a watershed moment in our lives.
Watershed. I love it, man.
I will say the best part of all of it was the amount of people that I had come out of the woodwork that I met. At the time, I worked at Guitar Center through this, which was, honestly, I was pretty useless even as an employee there because I couldn't lift anything unless I could carry it with one hand. And they were cool to let me work and be whatever. But I met a lot of folks there, and there were some super kind people. And a lot of people that told me their story being injured. Hubert Payne, who's a guy in town, he had a gnarly injury to his arm. Eddie Bayers had, like, his hand has been injured. And just them talking about overcoming it and seeing how they've succeeded despite that was, it kept me from getting to an even darker place than I already was.
Eddie Bayers had a hand injury, like, during his career?
I think it was maybe early on. There's just certain things that he has said that, like, he can't do necessarily, like, anyone else. Mashing all these stories together.
I understand. Yeah, we won't do that. I got you.
But, like, you know, there are limitations, or you have to have a certain position, and even Sterling Campbell, same situation, because I had met him a little bit around that time, and he had an injury from when he was a teenager, and it just dramatically affected his forearm, and so he has, like, a different technique for that reason, because he just has to work within the injury, and there are a lot of guys like that, and since then I've had friends who have also had similar things. I had a buddy break his collarbone and had to have surgery, and he was out for X amount of time, and I have a buddy right now who broke his leg and has a rod down his leg now, so who's a drummer, and it's all just
this is being so depressing.
Yeah,
holy shit. Yeah. I mean, what a downer.
There you go.
This is like, dude, can we get some, like, bro, I know you. There's
so,
like,
here's, we'll just start out low and then it's only up from here.
I'm just thinking of, like, all these injuries and all this horrible, you know, like, no, bro.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is none of these guys, the end game is none of these guys were permanently out.
Right.
And that's what I
right.
like to be there for people that I know or people that I meet.
No, that's the big, like, thing of life. Like, you're going to get knocked down.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
It's like...
Dick in the dirt.
It's that typical bullshit you see of, like, you know, what is it? Like, chicks... What is that called again? Affirmations and shit. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's how you get up.
Yes.
It's not when you...
It's all what you let it be.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you get up before the bell? You know, and will he do it again? And will he rise from the ashes?
Yeah. You just, like, gotta let your inner Mick trainer show up and...
Get up, because Mickey loves you, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, every day.
Every day.
Which, hilariously, now that I say that, I never really thought about it, but I had my roommate at the time was actually named Mick, and his voice wasn't quite that gnarly, but he had, like, he had the thing.
But he was young, I'm sure. See,
he was older. He was definitely older than me. His voice was beyond his years, but he was still an older cat.
Right.
And it was, so yeah, I guess I had my own Mick in a way. I never really thought about
it. The Mick.
Yeah.
Mick, cut me, Mick. Cut me. No, I won't do it. I won't do it. Let me.
I wouldn't do that to you.
So you got out, but this is just to, that was in Georgia.
No, I had.
That was here.
That was here. I hadn't been here a year.
Okay. So, but at this time, you're still getting to know people at least.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I meet some folks, right, and you know, it's definitely met some people and they're just like, can this guy actually play?
Right.
I guess we'll find out.
Right.
You know, whenever
we're just waiting on you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it's been, I mean, it's, you know, it's been good since then.
Wait, how long have you been here now?
10 years.
I can't believe it, man. That's crazy. I am thrown. So you must have lived here when we got in touch. I was confused. I was saying,
when I first listened to the show, I definitely still lived in Georgia. So.
Okay, so now I know what happened. So it started in 2012. So it's 11 years ago.
Yes.
So, okay, we were in touch the very first year, mm-hmm. and then you moved here. Mm-hmm. Okay, fair. I got it now. I'm better now, folks. I'm better. I understand now. It only takes me like 30 minutes or whatever it is. You know what I mean? We've healed. So you're here. What's the deal? By the way, you work at Nelson Drum Shop.
I do.
Or manage.
Sure.
Something. I don't know. I don't want to say it wrong. I mean, you know.
I work there.
They're going to listen to this, and if you're like, you know.
He's the guy.
You know. Yeah, okay.
He's the dude to talk to.
You're the dude, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the long-standing employee. Asa was the long-standing one before me, but he left about a year and a half ago, and it's been fun to see the business grow, because I met Bryson years ago when he was just doing it out of his house, and I bought a Rogers partial kit from him that was just a rack and. Or two rack toms and a kick drum. And I had a floor tom. So I just bought it and used it for a while. And that's where I met him. And then I did some like vintage backline in town with a couple buddies, Ken Coomer and Jacob Edwards. And I had a ton of drum sets. And then guys just got to the point that they were like, well, I'll just buy a vintage drum set. And there was no point for me to have 15 drum sets anymore. And it takes up a lot of fucking rent. So I had some of them for sale, and Bryson reached out to me, and this is when the reconnection between us happened, because I hadn't really seen him since then, and he had just opened the shop and wanted to know if I'd be willing to consign them, and that's when I like re-met him, and then I was in, you know, with some regularity, and then he would call me and ask me if I could cover the shop randomly, and that's where it started. Okay. And now here I am in the big building now for us, and working, doing the thing.
No, but it's interesting because you've really learned a lot about
I mean
the whole thing,
yeah, the business part of it, and like just had to, I definitely do not know everything, and there's a lot of gaps, but I have to know a pretty wide smattering about the vintage stuff, and it's it is interesting how we even still, though, have our, like, specialty to a large degree. I'm more or less the Gretsch dude at the shop of who all works there, and I definitely still don't know everything. Joseph is more of the Ludwig guy. Bryson is the Slingerland guy. And then there's other, like, we just fill in the gaps. We still have to look stuff up every once in a while. I mean, it's amazing how... Amazing, awesome, depressing, how many weird little... just niche items that you just never see, or, you know, that they didn't make, they weren't successful, and you just have, it's not that it's good or bad, you just never see them. It might not be very valuable.
So you know about things, Gretsch stuff, that you've never even seen.
A lot of them, yeah. Yeah, there's a few things, I mean, and you'll get stumped, because when you go back that far, I mean, custom orders happened then for a variety of people and a variety of reasons, and you'll see different stuff. For example, Twin Cities Drum Collective in Minnesota has a kit that is a transition badge, WFL, Bloodwood WFL, so it's a 59 or 60, but it has Gretsch, this Gretsch Starlight Sparkle wrap that was a custom order. The guy like got Gretsch to sell him the wrap, and he shipped it to Ludwig or whatever. It happened, but it's a one-off. And so there's all kinds of, like, weird shit like that as well.
Ah.
But you know it's original because it's got the wrap goes into the shell like a lot of the old Ludwig shells do. So it's just, like, weird stuff like that you'll find every once in a while, which is fun. But it's also, it can be infuriating when you're trying to price it, because it's just like, I don't know. What'll somebody pay, I guess? what do we feel like it's worth?
Because it could possibly be a one-off.
Yeah, it could literally be one of one. It could be one of ten.
Right.
And it's just, there's a lot of fun, weird things like that. One recently was, you know, just most of the time if you see what looks like a Superphonic and it has crimped beds and there's no serial number on the badge, odds are super high it's brass. But we had one come in the other day that's aluminum. And in the catalog, they listed that you could get this drum in a acoustaperfect shell, a seamless, I think it might have just said seamless metal shell. And it was just like a little byline in the thing. And, you know, but it's an aluminum, chrome over aluminum shell, but it has crimped beds and no serial number. So it's just like weird shit like that.
Acoustabed.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And there was another fun... Oh, a guy had ordered... The one owner kits that are weird are the best ones. And a guy brought in a 61 Slingerlin that he bought. And he had paid to have... You could buy a single bongo and have it mounted to any drum from Slingerlin back in the early 60s. And they had the diamond mount that, like, it was sort of... A little bit of it was chopped off. So it would fit on a snare drum shell. So the snare drum just has a single 6-inch bongo that slides into a mount on it.
And on the side of the snare drum?
Yeah. And he had some gig at the time that like made sense for. And that's why he ordered it.
That's fucking awesome.
And so it's just weird. And you know, and he brought a scanned version of the catalog from that year. And if you flip to the back, in the like very back, there's all the accessories and the options. And there it is. You can add a single bongo and a mount to a drum for something. It was like $40 or something.
And so you had the snare with the bongo?
Yeah, we had the kit. It was a whole kit. We sold it together. It was cool.
Damn.
So there's fun stuff like that. And you get cool kits of provenance or just cool kits that have like lived a long time in that way. And that's always fun.
Yeah.
You get to see that stuff. But then the player stuff is cool too. Like it might be ugly, but it sounds great.
Yeah.
So who gives a shit?
Right.
That's more my speed. I'm not the vintage perfectionist guy. I'm too much of a pragmatist. I want it to do the thing.
Well, you want to play it and be able to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not this. Oh, don't even look at not the whole. Don't look at it thing. Like just right. Yeah.
Do not gaze upon our Lord.
Well, I mean, I have to do for a minute with what I did with Heuer. Heuer.
Yeah.
I say Heuer because like the watch is Heuer. Talking about what some of his vintage. I mean, would you Frankenstein a kit ideally? Like, what's the ideal situation? Do you have a favorite vintage bass drum sound and tom sound and the, you know? Mm.
You know, what I have set up at the house that I've been recording with pretty much primarily for, with very rare exception, is I have a... Also, I love a good acquisition story. Okay. And this is one of those where I got this kit through an Athens friend. His cousin played drums. That cousin's wife played drums. And that cousin's son played drums. Everybody played drums. Cousin played professionally. Son was two. He was still in like high school or whatever. But the wife, her day gig was she was a professor of architecture. And she got a gig in Ireland. Tenured gig. So they were going to move. And they needed to sell a lot of drums. So I bought this round badge kit that he said was a 6-ply round badge kit and a snare drum that matched beat to shit.
The whole kit
was okay. Beat to shit. Like okay. Floor tom wrap coming off, only held together with a Marshall amplifier sticker over the seam.
Ooh.
Bass drum had a big chunk of wrap just gone. The rack tom was okay-ish. And I bought some other snare drums. And anyway, so... I get it, and then I open one of the drums, and I'm like, this isn't a 6-ply, this is a 3-ply. This is like a early 50s kit. So then I just decide I'm going to keep it, and I have it rewrapped to try to save it in its thing. And that's what I use for most things, truthfully. It's
a 50s 3-ply?
50s 3-ply. I took a long time to find the right hoops. They had different hoops on them. I found the stick choppers that would have been on it, which
I don't even know. Like, if they had the die cast thing or this.
No, in the You'll find some 3-ply that have die cast, especially when they start the transition into the 6-ply shell. But they had brass stick choppers that were thin. And they're cool, but man, they're fucking impossible to find these days, especially. And then I ended up buying a 12-inch shell somewhere along the line and had that wrapped to match because it didn't have any wrap on it. And those hoops were insanely hard to find because they got to be 12 lugs, so they have to be Gretsch. You can't just be like, I'm going to buy Leedy's and it'll be fine, because it just won't work. And so now in that kit, I have like sizes. I've got 20, 22, 24, 12, 13, 15, 16.
Oh, damn.
So I have like an arsenal of that. And that's what I like to use for stuff. But when I'm doing like modern country stuff or just things that need to be louder, I have a 70s Gretsch that's been rewrapped. That's the same. I don't have a 24, but all the rest of the
sizes. Stop sign?
Yep, stop sign. And I have a round badge that I bought just because it has a 12-depth bass drum, which I love.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, 12 by 20, 13, 16. That's my favorite sizes to play. It's awesome.
That's the Al Jackson sizes, isn't it? Didn't he do that?
I think so.
Or not, I mean, maybe 12, 16. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was a 20. I don't remember if the rack was a 12 or a 13.
That's what I'm saying. I know it was a 16, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, mostly, I've got a few, like, random other not Gretsch, like toms and bass.
Oh, yeah, you really are the Gretsch guy. Yeah,
yeah. I like the way it sounds.
I hear you. So, all right. So you're not the guy who's going to say I like Rogers toms and then I like, you know, I prefer.
I mean, I do.
That's what I was getting at before. Like, yeah. Have you, in your experience though, I mean, is there still that one where you're like, but that bass drum, man, that still haunts me to this day.
Drums that I.
That's what I was getting at.
The ones that got away. Complete list. I did buy one of these again recently. It took a long time to find an 8x14 rosewood, not the finish, but literal rosewood ply Gretsch that they made in the mid 2000s in the 8-inch size. There's not a lot of them out there. There's a guy in town that sold one, and I just was broke as fuck at the time. I couldn't buy it, but I got one of those. That's fun. I like that drum a lot. I actually sold a drum set to Keo, and he has since moved it on, but it was a really special one, and if I, like, had space for it, I would have bought it back from him, but it was a Trixon conical kit. Mm. And the bass drum is really the toms are awesome, but the bass drum is the sauce. It's, you know, it's 20-inch on the batter side, 16 on the resonant side, and every time you record it, it just sounds finished. At least in the times that I used it. And I'd have engineers be like, what the hell? This shouldn't sound this good. It's insane. And that was a pretty special one. I like that kit a lot.
I mean, again, that was just the kick almost. Could it be?
Yeah, it could be just the kick.
Mm-hmm.
A Camco, Oakland Camco bass drum, that was pretty special. It had like a note, which was wild. In such a... in a way that I've never heard in any other drum. That was super cool. The toms were cool, but I do like Roger's toms a lot. The kit I bought from Bryson, actually, those toms were pretty magical. Aaron Sterling might own them now, if he still has them. I think he bought them, because I ended up selling them back to Bryson years later. But it is funny. I've owned a lot of drums, a stupid amount of drums. And it's funny to see their homes around the U.S. One came back in at the shop that was mine. That was a Leedy, old-school tack bottom. I think it's going to go to a new home here in today or tomorrow. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. Just funny to see them come back around.
Yeah.
Long-lost children.
Yeah. No, I think it's cool. Because, again, you just know a lot now about this stuff. You're very, you know what I mean? Like, this is one of those things. It's just that niche thing, like you're saying.
The funny thing that I've never owned, though, is I've never owned, like, a proper Radio King kit. I think just because they go for so much money, I just have never really, like, messed with it.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of things. You haven't owned a Rolling Bomber, right?
That's true.
I'm sure there's a lot of things you haven't.
When they get expensive, that's when I'm out.
How much do I need to spend for, if I say, like, I want to get locate a nice set of Rolling Bombers? What am I looking at?
It's going to be, a nice set is probably going to be six plus thousand.
See, I still in my mind somehow go, that's all? Like, and not that I can swing that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I keep expecting more than that.
And that's going to be just for, like, a two toms, that the wrap is not trashed.
Right.
The lugs aren't cracked. The hoops aren't cracked. Everything's in round. That, you know, you may have some aging on the wrap. If you wanted like a pretty, let's say, excellent condition one, you're looking at five numbers for sure, I'd say. And if you add a snare, the snares can go for almost two to, if it's a really, if it's a Duco finish one, which is, I've only seen one of, I mean, that would be some, and it's in great shape. I mean, they go for a lot. Even beat up ones go for like $1,400 that are just beat to hell.
Yeah. Okay. We're getting more closer to what I was thinking. Like you said, the five numbers and all it's that. Like, that makes more sense to me.
It gets pretty, and they're, the real rub though is they're just hard to find.
That's what I mean. So even if I tell you, like, this is what I'm looking for, it's like, good luck. Like
good luck. Yep. Yeah, which is always the problem when, like, the last one the shop had, a guy in Germany bought, which is a nightmare. It's always a nightmare. I hate shipping them overseas. Not because I don't want people to have them. It's just that there's, like, a million things that could go wrong.
Yes. And you just think this is a sin if something cracked or it's just...
Yes. And it was in there. It is a 28-inch bass drum, which means it's automatically going to be. I mean, it was like almost $1,000 to ship.
I bet,
because it hits the overage, and it's international, and it's heavy or heavy-ish, you know, to be such a big box. So the other, this has definitely been one of the worst like shipping things that I've ever dealt with. I make the thing, the label with FedEx. Everything seems fine, because normally if it won't deliver it based on the size and stuff, it says we won't deliver it. So I do it, and then I take it to the FedEx location, and they're like, this can't go. And I was like, what do you mean? And you got to go through freight. Okay. So then I go cancel the label, do the freight thing, get the freight thing set up, and then they're like, and you can't bring it back here. You've got to take it to the freight part over here where all the trucks are. Fine. So I take it over there, and I roll up, and the freight people are like, this isn't on a pallet. And I was like, no, nobody said it needed to be on a pallet. And they were like, what is it? And they like measure it, and they're like, this isn't even going to be freight. This is going to be normal. And it became this whole back and forth. And then I have to call a FedEx rep and do this whole thing just to try to find a place that will take it in town. Even though I'm at the airport one, which is the one. And it became this 3-week endeavor. And then they were like, we can get it. The guy lived in Munich. And they were like, we can get it to Frankfurt. And so He's like, that's cool. I'll go get it. And we finally get it all taken care of. It leaves. They deliver it to his house. It's like all this bullshit. It just ended up doing the thing it needed to do the whole time anyway. It was, and nobody had answers. It was like one of the weirdest. I've never had a shipping thing like that. It was very funny and bizarre just because it was such a, like, at the end of the day, a nothing burger, which is how I feel like.
So can you, does that also make you guys say like, okay, no more of that. Just fuck that. We're not doing this again. Or no, you can't do that. I mean,
I just always say,
you want to shut the door.
If it's a big bass drum, we just have to say, you got to email us. We got to talk about it first. Cause your address can really limit it.
Yeah.
Because that is true. Some of the machining for like sorting stuff, it just can't handle a box over 30 inches,
which is
what a 28 is going to be. It's going to be like 32 inches. Yeah. By 32 or whatever.
And the other thing I was curious about offhand is going, when you have a set of rolling bombers like that, do you have to really nail down a price, or why can't you just go bidding war on something like that?
We could.
Or is it just that you don't want to be that guy? Is that part of it? Is it just
there's a little bit of that, and you have people in bidding stuff, just like you do on eBay, people back out, and then you have to, then you can always go down the line, but it just almost ends up becoming like, okay, this guy won the bid by $100, but then did you spend $100 in labor hour trying to like get him to pay, be talking to him, and then ultimately having to go to the second person and saying, do you still want this?
Yeah.
And that's best case scenario, because then if they don't want it anymore, then you've got to go down. And what was the third? The third could have been a huge jump in price. It could have not been. We just, and you know, you live by the bidding, you die by the bidding. Because we all see shit on eBay.
I'm saying it's like just thinking, just go for the big money, Mick. But you can't because then you.
Yeah.
That greed in the end.
It can, and you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
It could be.
Just set a price.
And it does the thing, and we just take care of it.
Yeah. Let it go.
Yeah.
But by the way, do you happen to know Jay Bellarose? Like, do you?
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know? Does he own a few of those, or is he?
You know, I don't know how many he owns at this point. I know he has the road one that he takes out, and I'm sure he probably has a second at least. I do know he's like, I think maybe downsized the collection, or he has been threatening to downsize just his overall thing. But I met Jay kind of early on. There was one of the drums that I had, kits that I had for Backline, and he ended up facilitating Paula Cole buying it. So it lives at her studio, which was a Gretsch 2013-16, a great round batch, great sizes, in Tangerine Sparkle.
At Paula Cole?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because she just, I think, wanted some drums that anybody could, like, show up and play, or Jay could play if they were going to have, like, a rehearsal or record some stuff.
That's so great, man.
We sell a pretty surprising amount of great drums to people that have great drummers around them, but they don't themselves necessarily play drums. They may be artists, they may be studio owners.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, like, yeah, we, yeah, yeah, but yeah.
Kind of a lot. It's fun. That is actually probably my...
Like celebrity, basically, is what you're also getting at.
A little bit, but just that they may not play drums at all. And they're buying these, like, right. incredible kits. So they know what good drums sound like, and right. that's what they want. But
They want it for their home studio, yeah. and their drummers to come in. Because pros are going to be playing them.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. Yeah. And it's cool, because...
Makes sense.
They may not know... They can't tell you, oh, I want a Gretsch kit or I want a Ludwig kit. They're like, I want drums that sound like this. And that's always the real fun challenge, because you get to walk through this process with them to say, okay, so what about this? You like the way this sounds? No, yes. And then you just go down the line, and it's the problem solving part of getting to what they want. It can be, there's versions of it that are incredibly stressful because the customer just like really doesn't know what they want. But
I don't know.
Yeah. Or the indecisiveness. But there's a lot of fun when you find it and they're like, these sound great. And they're super stoked with the
purchase. I want a kit that can do Levon, but it could also do Tony Thompson from the Battle Station. Could we do something like, it does both? It does Stuart Copeland, but it also does Alex Van Halen? Like, can I get that?
Yeah.
That also does James Ganson? You know? That also does, you know... Yeah, do you have, I mean, I'm just guessing, like, you're talking about also, like, so, like, artists in Nashville,
mm-hmm.
Nashvillean people.
Some.
And, like, their names, and you're like, hey, look at this, so-and-so. Do they do it personally? Is it?
A lot of them, yeah. A lot of them do.
Do they come in?
Yeah, often, especially if they're, I mean, if they are producers or engineers, absolutely mm-hmm. are coming in. Mm-hmm. Artists do a lot of times. Sometimes they will see it online. And the only thing they, and validly, you know, they may not know anything about Nelson other than just, hey, we're in town and I know so-and-so that has played drums for me, likes it. I'm going to see if he can go by and look at it because he knows drums and he can make sure there's no problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. It's just like taking your mechanic buddy to buy a car. Mm-hmm. It's the same deal. And so a lot of times they'll send someone in their stead and then they'll call and pay for it over the phone. Or whatever. So
was that some of the maybe one of the biggest stars pull that kind of routine?
It's not necessarily. I don't think it's that they're afraid to come in. I think it's just that they
busy. I was thinking more busy.
Oh like, yeah, yeah. That just that busy. Thing.
Time is money. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last one. I mean,
like I'm just I just for fun. I'm saying like when you think of like the biggest name, literally, like did they come in? In person, or did someone else do it for them?
Well, the biggest name that's ever been in the doors was Robert Plant.
Oh, okay.
And
right on.
That
was he just looking, or was he?
Well, he's been at the initial entry in was Victor Krause, Allison's brother, who plays in the Robert and Allison ensemble, is a regular because he has a studio and great guy. Love his playing. Love him as a human being. They were looking for places in town that were interesting to do photos for press photos for the second record.
Oh.
And he suggested Nelson. And so the day before they wanted to do it, Eric, the photographer Eric Anderson called, was like, hey, last minute, weird request. Is it possible that we could shoot photos of Robert Plant and Alison Krauss in your shop tomorrow? Absolutely. I'm pretty sure I'll get Bryson to okay it, but I'm pretty sure it'll be fine. So they came in and they did the thing, but he's been in multiple times since then, and he never calls. He just shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And same deal. He apparently goes to Grimey's, which is the like local record store, and he just thumbs through. And wherever he stops, he'll come back 2 days later, and he'll go right back, and he'll pick back up where he left off. Just.
But I mean, that's so interesting. Like, so is Robert Plant just coming in just to browse?
Mm-hmm. Just to hang out. And he's got, I mean...
He's not buying anything.
He buys things for other people. That are friends or uh-huh. that he wants to do this or that.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
He's just a great dude. And
love it.
Super kind.
Love it.
And just very generous with his time and his stories and just...
So he'll talk? He'll just... Mm-hmm, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean...
Does he answer questions? Is it that kind of thing where you feel like you can say, like, hey, can I ask you something? And he's going to go, sure, go ahead.
I could maybe... I just sort of let him... The day that the photo shoot happened, I just let him tell us whatever he wanted to tell us. And he did tell us about the last time he saw John, which was a rehearsal the day before he passed away. And he and John were early for rehearsal, and they were just there. And John's like... I don't want to do this today. I don't want to have rehearsal. And Robert was like, well, let's switch. You sing the day, I'll play drums. And they did that the whole rehearsal. Because I guess they used to do that when they were like kids. And they're like, whatever, they'd practice. They'd swap. And they had a great day. And he was like, and then I never saw my friend again. And
wow, man.
Like heavy and...
That is deep.
But like so... meaningful to just share that with a shop that is, I mean, there are other shops that are definitely vintage centric, but you've chosen to take photos in our place and we're trying to honor that world. And then giving us that kind of story. It's like, I mean, it's a powerful moment. It's cool.
He knew what he was doing. He's talking to drummers and all
that. For sure.
He knows.
Yeah.
The power.
What he mostly wanted to talk about was he really right now is into, and has been for a long time, but is still very much into the like North African Mali blues kind of stuff. Oh. And that's what we wanted to talk about. So then I put some on and he was like, yeah. And that's what they were taking the photos to. It was very, he was pumped.
Yeah.
But he just, you know, mills around town when he's around. So.
Yeah.
But it is funny. I mean, we have guys like, there's a lot of guys that have come in that I know who they are, and I have never met them, and they may not be drummers, and I'm just like, I heard you and I hit that, and I loved it, and I just wanted to say that. Thanks for coming to the shop. Mike Elizondo was one, whenever he came in and bought a snare drum, and there have been a few others, but the Mike Elizondo episode is actually one of my favorites.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that guy's cool, man, because I mean, he would do like these gigs at the Blue Whale
mm-hmm.
with Babco and
yeah,
just the boys, you know, and bringing his upright. And it's like, you don't need to be there, bro. Like lugging that shit up the elevator the whole thing. Like, he didn't need to be doing that, man.
No.
Guy co-wrote In the Club. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He don't need to be there. But like,
he's there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's real. He's real, man.
Yeah.
I mean, some guys are just real.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the last time I got to go to the Blue Whale was... it was Mike Viola and Kaveh Rastegar was on bass. A. Brown's on drums. It was supposed to be Chamberlain, I think, originally. And then it got changed somewhere along the line. Larry Golding's on keys. It was...
we're going to get A. Brown's.
Yeah.
A. Brown's, I'm coming for you. I am coming for you. Man,
love that dude's playing.
Yeah.
Best ride singles I've ever heard.
Well, there's so many guys. I mean, we talk about that. I was saying with a friend the other day, the idea of when you think about it, like how many guys there are
mm-hmm.
out there, like mm-hmm. top guys all over the place and just names where it's like, oh, that fucking guy.
Yep.
There's really so many.
It's staggering.
It's staggering. And it starts to seem like there's enough for everybody. So it's a little confusing.
Oh, for sure.
If you know what I'm getting at.
Yes.
It can seem very deceptive
mm-hmm.
in that way. Because it's like here, even you go, well, there's really only like sort of a handful of guys. Top guys.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two handfuls.
Right.
Well, whatever. And then there's like a whole other...
Oh, it's a pyramid.
It's a pyramid, and it's just... Oh, it's just massive, though. And so many are working.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean...
So...
It's...
And that's just here.
That's... Oh, yeah, yeah. The insane per capita musician count here is unique. Very unique. And that was even... I mean, it's only gotten more so, and that per capita has gotten higher, I think. It feels like it has. But before I moved here, it was something like you were 6 or 10 times more likely to meet someone who was a musician in Nashville than the second place city in the U.S. for that. Which is, I mean, that's heavy. That's a lot of cats. And yeah, there the session world tends to, especially here, tends to be like pretty tight-knit, pretty small, both on all instruments, not just drums. But I mean, when you get into the touring thing, even the guys that are on the larger gigs... You go one step down, I mean, you just multiplied the second step, that number of artists alone is 20 times 20, and then it just continues to be exponential like that as you go down. So, and you'll find guys at the top playing with folks at the bottom because they're buddies or friends or they just like the tunes. That's actually one of the cooler things. You can have these gigs like the 5 spot or whatever, and you'll just have some like big dog up there knocking it down.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which, I mean, that happens in LA and in New York and all that shit too, but it's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. There's definitely a thing that's a little different. I mean, you haven't spent time in LA, or have you? I mean, I guess you have on the road, right?
I have. I was actually, before I broke my arm, I had like it all lined up. I was moving.
You were considering that was the idea, LA?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay.
I had friends there. I was going to move in, stay there.
Interesting.
For, you know, get my sea legs. But then, the arm break.
So just to be clear, does that mean you moved here and then we're still staying LA, though?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got here and I just didn't... It was... I mean, Nashville's... It's definitely the biggest city it's ever been, but it's not very big in the grand scheme of cities.
No.
And I've lived in Atlanta as well. And Atlanta... Just the example that I always thought about then was, I remember I was in Atlanta, roommate forgot to pay the water bill, and I needed to drive to the water department. And it was almost, when you look at like where I was in the city and where the water department was, and you look at the same kind of situation when I moved to Nashville, where I lived, where the water department was, it like looked sort of the same in terms of just positioning within the oval of the city. And in Atlanta, it was like 35 minutes one way. And in Nashville, it was 10. And it just like, yeah. Everything just felt so small for it to still be a city and had a lot going on. I just really wanted the big city thing. I mean, Athens is small. I wanted to experience what it is to live in a for real, like, you got to deal with all the bullshit that comes with the city thing.
Yeah.
And, then it just got, the arm break heavily derailed that. And then it, like, pretty much wiped all the money that I had saved. And from the cost of the arm itself and then the lost gig money and everything. So I just was like, fuck it. I'm just going to stay here, I guess.
Yeah.
And I don't regret it. But it was definitely, that was the plan. It wasn't like, oh, I'm thinking about it. Like, I wasn't going to live in the place. I was like in the place I was living with Mick was month to month with him. Like I had it like set just waiting for this thing to, I was waiting. I had a date. I think it was going to be March 1st is when I was going to try to land there. So, I mean, it was locked and loaded more or less. I hadn't booked the U-Haul. That's the last thing I hadn't done. So
interesting.
Yeah. It's close.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But I have friends that live there that are not musicians and I would go visit a lot, and so I spent a decent amount of time there for someone that never lived there at the time.
Right.
It's been forever since I've been there outside of touring now.
Right. But you like the touring thing, right?
I do. I like it at times. You know, it's just like anything. It has its bullshit. You have your 3:30 lobby calls for stuff. That gets really taxing. That's actually the number one thing that keeps me from wanting to do it. But I like going
to lobby call?
The 3 a.m. lobby calls.
3 a.m. lobby calls. Yeah, okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Just that kind of
gotcha,
shit.
Gotcha.
It's like, we don't need to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, saving money, isn't it?
I guess. Yeah, but at what cost? Pyrrhic victories.
Well, that's this is the thing, isn't yes. it? I mean, they love to cut corners.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, we can save $20 on this flight.
Right, right.
Now, if you're doing that because you got to get somewhere by a certain thing in the middle of a day, like, there are reasons. But when it's like, oh, we're going to come home and we have a 3:30 lobby call, like, why are we doing this?
Saving
that,
money.
Yeah, that kind of thing. It. Gets under my skin, but I like going places. I like seeing things, eating stuff from different places. Every once in a while, like, there's going to be just some terrible, terrible gig that has no redeeming quality other than you did it and you got to play some music and make some money, but the place sucks and people sucked and or the production was terrible or whatever. And so the live things, it's fun. It's ever changing. You know, I'm also not at a level where it's like every night's the same, where it's like, oh, there's a riser and it's going to be set up exactly the same.
No.
I don't have that. I have done that, but I don't have that.
It's nothing but surprises.
Yeah, it's always something different. And, you know, it's summer, so it's festival season and I'm flying and who knows what drums I'll play this weekend.
Yeah, what do you bring? Cymbals? And...
This weekend I bring cymbals. I've sort of been dabbling in backlining cymbals, which is always a risky move because you might get a ping ride on a gig where you just don't need it or the opposite. So, but... Yeah, I normally just carry... If I don't know what I'm getting myself into and no one's told me, I'm going to take a snare drum and cymbals and I might put my bass drum pedal in a suitcase.
Mm.
I tend to be an over-preparer because I just don't want to get there. I've had too much absolute dog shit backline to trust anyone.
Yeah.
I'm a broken man.
I've been hurt too many times. I put my heart out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you give me camber. Mm-hmm. You know, you give me, yeah.
I had an early 2000s PDP kit. That's the most recent, like, pretty awful. Like, it works. They are drums. All the parts are there. But, like, really, man?
Well, you hate the look.
I hate the look, but it's the hanging. Every tom hanging.
Right.
And leaving the floor tom. And it's a 14 right. with Ooh, a 22 and a floors. 10. And you're like, what are we doing, man? This is not what I need.
Right.
But it's...
Right.
The middle of South Dakota. So, what am I going to do?
What are you going to do, man?
I'm going to play it and leave.
What are you going to do? You play that shit and you just... What are you going to do, guy?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you do. You yeah. just lay it down. But I get though also the idea of going, fuck it, I don't care. I understand that. There's a freedom when you're not precious about gear.
Yes.
There really is.
Like, yeah. I just, like...
There truly, truly is. Just, if you can really be the guy who's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Just put it in... Okay, fine. Like, fine.
Mm-hmm. I can make most things sound pretty good.
Right.
At least in one zone. It may just be different than normal. My other thought is that, like, well, maybe this will make the artist realize how important what they play behind normally is. And...
I mean, guitars can't do it.
Oh, no. No, I mean, and I get that.
They can't. No one. They would just be driven crazy mm-hmm. if you said, "Well, here's your amp."
Well, a lot of guys just, in town do the Kemper thing or the like modeler, that they just have it all programmed in and it's in a bot like a Pelican and they just fly with it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, if I could do that for drums.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
I haven't gone electric.
I was just going to say, you could go electric. I mean, get that 5150 sound.
You know, they put a bunch of Rollins on some of the bars of downtown.
They did?
Yeah. Because they're concerned about volume, which I understand because it gets loud in those rooms. But, I mean, no one has ever looked at an electronic kit and been like, that's durable.
Yeah, I mean...
Because it's getting played from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m.
Sure.
Every day.
Sure.
They don't hold up. I will see how it is long term. I mean, I think we're coming up on like a little bit over a year that they've been in those places. It's very funny to see, though. I'm sure the guys that do that world more regularly could offer a lot of
It's bizarre. It's bizarre, but okay, whatever, man.
Yeah.
Whatever, Nash. You know what I mean? I don't know. Hey, you know?
They could just change every tom to a cha-cha bell and really just, like, piss off some artists. That would be...
I like that idea. You're heading out this week. I mean, you're doing a lot, is what I'm saying. You're doing a lot of the road work. I know it's tiring. Mm-hmm. I get that.
Oh, yeah.
You'd prefer to be in town and doing that kind of thing and just...
You know what? I would like to record more. I don't know that I want it... It's hard for me to sit here and say, yeah, I'd like to do that exclusively. Because I do like going places. It's breaks it up. I get a little stir crazy when I'm here a long time. I'd like to have maybe a better balance. Right now, the touring thing is definitely more lopsided from a, maybe not from a time thing, but definitely from a monetary standpoint. And if it could be a little more even, that would be cool.
Yeah.
But I'm still very, I'm very grateful, to have anything that I have here and anything that comes through. I mean, cause there are a lot of players here and there are a lot of great players here. But I'm just very fortunate, and it's something that I think about often because it could just go away.
Oh yeah.
For like health reasons or for just all kinds of stuff. And it's anytime I get a call, it's always nice just because it's a thing that's like very easy to take for granted. That is also one thing, I guess, of being at the shop. You have the older cats and who were really busy for a long time. And they're like, yeah, just one day.
Just stop.
It sort of stopped. And you're like, man, but you're still so good. But it's perception. So much of the business is perception. in terms of the call. And you can't control that. Doesn't matter what you think you can. You just can't.
Yeah.
So you just got to show up and do your best. And that may not be enough for some people. Also, because the gig, there's just all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's funny to think about, we've all had the terrible gig stories, but like you really start breaking down the different versions of that. And when you're doing it professionally and all the implications of those things, it's, you see your buddies get fired for no reason, you know, or for some like bullshit political thing but then a different friend gets it and it's a totally fine thing and they're on the gig for a long time. It is just interesting to see it all happen and just be grateful for... I'm just grateful for I'm not in like some kind of like super dramatic situation ever with like a gig. And to be like respected and taken care of.
Yeah, we're not even going to touch the drama.
No.
No, we're not doing that because...
No.
We're going to let... Others have handled... some issues, if you know what I'm saying.
It's best
taken care of that way, because then it's back to that community thing, and you know.
Yeah, and the community,
we take care of our own kind of vibe.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean?
And the community here is very... I do.
Well, I meant, in fact, back to just the community. Could mean L.A., New York, Nashville. Yeah. Just the the listening.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like worldwide.
That's what I
drummers,
do.
Man.
Drummers. It is a cool thing, and it is.
Like, guys are going to hear this from wherever they are, and they're going to come here visiting, whatever it is, and they're going to end up at Nelson, and they're going to be like, yeah, where's Lemmy? Is Lemmy here?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, man, I heard you, bro.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is...
Man, I see you!
It is really funny to, like, I've sold something on, like, a drummed on reverb somewhere along the way, and then it obviously has my name on the return address, and the guy will message me, and he's like, dude, I saw, like, yo, you played on this gig, and I, like, whatever... 5 years ago or something. I may not even remember it.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It's nice to know that you can... And then, you know, some of those guys I'm friends with now. Yeah. There's people that I've never met that, like, we met in some kind of... They were selling something and I was sort of interested in it and they were, like, cool and so we kept talking. And, I mean, there was a guy that lives somewhere in, like Bakersfield area that a buddy here was selling a cymbal that he wanted and I was like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. I can get it and mail it to you. So just that kind of shit, and I've had guys do it for me. It's great. It's fun, especially if it's like a weirdo rare piece of gear that I want.
Yeah.
So I like the community. It is funny. It is interesting how different it is than a lot of the other instrument communities. I don't really know why.
There is a thing. I mean, I just was talking about this. It's like that stereotype exists for a reason. There is no real... I'm sorry, guitar players. I know that some are listening and they're going to be like, that's not true. But you just don't... No, you don't. You don't. You just don't have the same community.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't have the same brotherhood.
Yeah.
And you just don't like each other the same. I'm sorry. Like, I know there's going to be exceptions. There's always exceptions.
Always.
Like, oh, but we do it. Good for you. There's like four of you or whatever it is. Like, you don't do it like on a whole.
Yeah.
Guitar players. They just don't. Bass players. singers get together. Like, no, you don't. Like, no, you don't. You don't. It's, it's drummers.
Yeah.
And it's a thing. It's a tribal thing. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but it's...
Maybe it's that.
I know it's something that we can't quite put a finger on, but, like, we're fucking cool. Drummers are just fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I wouldn't trade that in, man.
No.
I know it's a pain in the ass to lug. It's a... It's
oh, all, yeah. All we signed up for a lot.
Yeah.
It is a fun instrument, though. Like, the thing that's so fun about it, I think, that draws a lot of people in and does keep it exciting, even on a professional level. And it's the thing that I think sometimes we don't think about. It's like, oh, someone's set up. If someone plays keyboard, the fucking two notes are always next to each other. Mm. You're never going to put the B two keys down.
Right.
You know, and the guitar, it's interesting in that way. And
I see what you mean.
Yeah. Like...
What's with the tilt?
Yeah. With the tilt? Why you got the small tom on the right side of the other tom?
Right.
Just those sorts of things.
And the Kenny Aronoff, if you will. Yeah,
yes.
Why the Hunt Sales tilt? Why the, like, you know, it's everyone, you're right, yeah.
But also,
everyone always thinks they're right, too. I always appreciate that, like, at a jam. That guy, you know? Well, I was always told, put it between the legs. You want it at this, you know, height. You want it, so it's like, how about go F yourself? I was told, you know, your mother gives good. How about that? You want to hear what I was told?
You know, I've only heard that there's only one kind of right hamburger, and anyone else that serves the wrong hamburger should get fucked and die.
But that's what I'm saying. There is that thing.
Oh, yeah.
And we're there more than ever now with postures and this and that. And you're like, look at Phil Collins, guy. You know why he's like that? Because it's like, you know what? I'll tell you something. Folk, motherfucker, like, do you realize the life that guy's had? You'll never have that life.
Oh, yeah.
You will never be that famous. You will never live and fly in the jets. Was it Live Aid one day? Guy plays, right?
And yeah.
I forget the direction because I'm turned around, but I guess Europe first, then flies to Philly, or do I have that turned around? I don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Same idea.
Insane.
It's like, you're never going to have that.
No. Also, you're never going to sit on a literal piece of plywood that had the thinnest piece of foam as the highest possible thrown option.
Right.
Yeah.
You're using the round thrown.
Because that was your option.
Right. No, you know what I'm saying.
And
And you're never going to have a divorce for, you know, millions of dollars. Do you know what I'm saying? And mental anguish it takes out of you. And you're never going to, like, spend a lot of time at the Alamo thinking you were reincarnated. There's a lot to Phil Collins.
That's true.
Okay, guys?
The Alamo thing is...
You don't want to trade... Dude, Phil Collins really believes.
Oh, yeah.
He's a reincarnated...
I think he is the largest private owner of Alamo memorabilia in the world.
I believe so. And again, like, believes he was there. And, like, in a previous life, you have to carry that with you. Like, it's one thing to say, like...
Card carrying?
Well, it's one thing to say, like, I believe in reincarnation or whatever, I'm open to that. But, like, to really actually be in touch with, like, and I know who I was.
Yeah.
That's different level shit, bro. Like, how serious can you take me if I'm like, yo, Lem, I gotta tell you, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was Bunny Berrigan. You know what I mean? Like, I was. Like, I'm not just a fan.
Sure.
I was Bunny Berrigan. Yeah. Like, that's deep. Bro.
That's true.
You know,
I mean, today is the Senate and congressional hearing on the metallic spheres that NASA had the 4-hour press conference about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The short of it is there are these in aerial footage, satellite footage. There are these metallic spheres worldwide.
Oh wait, do you like that stuff? You can admit it.
I've just always, being a scientist, you got to keep an open mind.
Because being a scientist,
I went to school for mechanical engineering.
Oh, okay.
And I like.
Oh, you're a quantum physics kind of guy.
Yeah. Took a lot of physics courses.
Oh,
took a lot of.
Interesting. We got a whole new spin here.
Oh,
too late in this game, my friend.
I know.
What are you talking about? Are you an Art Bell guy? He knows who our face is. He could have been like, who? But
yeah.
He's an Art Bell guy.
Yeah. I mean, I took an elective for modern physics, and that was, it's a...
Hold on. What fascinates me is that, that when I saw Elon Musk recently says, in other words, you're going to know it, so I'm just paraphrasing now, but it was something to the effect of, I think I would know, or I would have heard, if we had, like, alien spacecraft or something like that. And I just thought to myself, that's kind of interesting, because there is some seemingly truth to that. Like, he's in a position where he's probably going to have heard something. And then you go, or is he just fucking with us?
Well, there's...
Is he actually the...
Yes. You know? So that's the... Well, that's the real rub. I mean, as we see even now, with so many, like, documents being declassified in the past 5 or 10 years, just not necessarily in extraterrestrial stuff.
I knew he knew his
stuff. But just general things. We love to cover something up if we want to have a control. I mean, that's classic governance.
Well, yeah.
Going back millennia.
Sure.
So, would he know? He might. Is he at any liberty to ever talk about it without being murdered in his own home, despite being the richest man in the world? Absolutely not.
Well, okay. I'm not disputing that. So,
yeah, and so I
think... Does he have to come out and even say that?
I think that that's just the type of person he is, more than anything. He loves a little nugget of, like, that he might be...
Sure.
Sure. That's how he strikes me. And there may be, there may not be. The thing is I think that I only gave it... I'm not like the crop circles guy. It's never really been a thing. But for NASA to have such an abnormally long press conference about not UFOs on a general level, but this specific thing...
Right.
Is really kind of like... That was the only thing that sort of gave me pause about the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just so... out of the ordinary for them.
Right.
So, could be, that. But again, that could be this all, this them doing all of this could also be smoke and mirrors.
I thought they did admit, I mean, I thought that was a thing where, like, they're like, we're admitting there's this, and there's this, and there's this, and you think,
they have admitted,
it's finally come out, yes. And it didn't even make a really splash at all in the news. Nobody seemed to care. Everybody was sort of like, well, yeah.
Yeah, because they just said...
And we're kind of numb to it, but, like, I feel like that we've already admitted, haven't
we? We have admitted that there are... I think it's that there are generally things that we don't know. But the other part that they are always kind of... And we have... You would have to keep in mind, because we know we have them, is does somebody else in the world have a fast, weird plane or something that we don't know about?
Right, right.
And I think that that's... They have acknowledged there are... cases of UFO or, like, unidentified things in the sky that have been reported by pilots and that have years of service and all these things. Yeah. It's the specificity of this that, like, is the thing. It is not them as a whole. It is these particular things that keep showing up.
Right.
And they are addressing it.
Right.
So it could be a nothing burger. It could be itself could be a smoke and mirrors for something else.
Right.
Focus on this for whatever. I don't know. I think that if there is something else out there and it's here, it's not probably good for us.
Yeah.
Just, they could be benevolent, but they're going to be, they had the ability to get here and we don't have the ability to get to them. So,
well,
it's going to be bad.
I like this. And I like that kind of thinking. And I am fascinated with the, what's his name? Blink 183.
Oh, Tom. Yeah.
Is it 183 or 182?
Two.
Sorry. How did I even make that mistake?
We haven't made it a trilogy yet.
I'm such a fucking, like what a, like such boomer talk. I'm like, what are you, Blink 183?
Oh, yeah, gonna Netflix your boyfriend.
Totally, totally. But that guy, that's fascinating that he even just wanted to go into that thing. And I've listened to stuff when I was trying to be like, do you have anything... He claims he knows a lot, but I never really heard anything too explosive. But maybe same thing, afraid of death? I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I mean, could be. I think it's one of those things where it's...
I mean, the Kennedy comes out and just is like, the CIA definitely killed my uncle.
Yeah.
And my... You know.
Yes.
He doesn't give a shit, apparently, about, like...
Anything or anyone.
But I guess... But see, that's the flip side with all this kind of stuff. It's almost like, give him enough rope.
Yeah.
Because they look at it like, go ahead, you sound like a psycho.
Yes.
You sound crazy. Yes. Do you hear yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Cuckoo.
Which is always a part of the thing.
The clock just pushing the sound effects, you know, like, so in a way, just like let people go on about, like,
yeah.
No, man, the green men exist. And they're like, sure.
It's sure. It, honestly, in a lot of ways, the whole discussion about that is not dissimilar sometimes when someone's just like, oh, yeah, well, you know, so-and-so owned this drum set back in the day. And I'm like, you have literally
no proof,
nothing to back this up. And
no paperwork, no.
If you had a photo,
yeah,
we could start.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all like that sort of thing. And I just approach everything with a very open mind and just
absolutely.
try to sift through whatever.
And we got here from Phil Collins.
We got here from Phil Collins.
At the Alamo, by the
way. That's right.
Just reincarnation.
Well, I guess I went immediately because there's the... I just recently watched... I had never watched The X-Files start to finish.
Oh, okay.
And I did that in the past year. And there's an episode with where they go to... They get put on something and then Mulder's like, I was here years ago. And it's... You know, it's got the sepia tone when he goes back. So,
Yogi Berra, deja vu all over again.
Yeah. You know, 50% of the time, I'm right 100% of the time.
Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. That's one of my favorites. I love that one.
I mean, it's the funny truth.
You can observe a lot by watching.
Ah, yes.
Yogi, man. I'm telling you, Yogi. It's the best.
It's true. But this started the science. I said something about the science thing, but
the fact that like you, that's alone, like, okay, well, yeah. That's good. I mean, I knew, you know,
I just didn't. The honest answer, the short of why I stopped and I didn't go that route is I was in high school. I was very lucky to be at this wildly small school that had an electric vehicle program. So we built a go-kart, we converted an old truck, and I competed at an international conference, and I spoke before Congress and all this stuff as a high schooler. And
you did?
For the Future Car Congress in 2002 and 2003, and competed in Tour de Sol, which is this like worldwide event that has all these alternative fuels from biofuels to solar to whatever. And then I volunteered at that in college. But when I was in college, any other like activists or shit out there, there's a documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car, and everything that is in that documentary happened when I was in college, and it was when oil and auto companies were able to stack the California Board of Emissions, and they got these really strict emissions repealed. And so GM had the EV1 and some other EVs. Toyota had an all-electric RAV4. There were all these electric cars, but you could never own them. You could only ever lease them. And as soon as that decision came down and those strict emission standards weren't in effect, they canceled every lease and went and got every car, and they crushed every one of them. They had spent billions on fucking all the technology in it. And then they were just like, ha-ha, fuck off. And they just literally crushed them in a car crusher. They didn't salvage them. They didn't take shit out of it. They crushed them. And they have like a helicopter flies over the zone where the GM EV1 at the time was no mass-produced car had ever had a lower drag coefficient. And they just crushed them. There's like a few that they gave to schools, but they took a part out so they could never be driven legally. They could just look at them and like put them around the school.
This is really dangerous because I could totally get into the conversation with you about like how they get that team to look over there.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I hear you, but look over there, dude.
Yeah.
I don't even want to say it because it's gonna drive people fucking crazy, and they're gonna be like,
but it was like
this gets into politics, so we have to be careful. But like the point is like
that was just what I wanted to
do. I know though. I'm saying I know.
And so to
always see, focus on the wrong thing.
And then to see like, I could spend my life working on something as advanced as just the next thing of an EV1, and then this company could just be like, every company basically that was doing it could be like, yeah, we don't care about this anymore, and it's toast.
Well, yeah, I get it, but it's also kind of wild, like thinking like, okay, so you could have been off to something a whole different path.
Oh yeah. I was on that that track.
You're down here with us. You're down here. You know, here with the drummers.
It's been a while with Svetlana Krauts learning some differential equations at Georgia Tech, but
I mean,
you know, then I just abandoned that post.
But it's still in you. It's in you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Some of my friend, a guy that I went to tech with is, has a doctor in physics and does like astronomy telescope design research.
Who's the guy who claims he saw the working UFO? What's his name again? And it's like the ball, like a basketball. Like it just sits in there. There's no steering wheel or buttons.
Oh, I don't know.
Come on, you've heard that guy.
I have heard the story, but I don't know his name.
I can't remember his name. Yeah. That's an interesting one, like, because it defies, mm-hmm. Not, is it grav? No, it's gravity. No. Anyway.
But yeah, it becomes Schrodinger's box, baby.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, you have all this, that mind for this. That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. You, well, you, it ain't over yet.
No, no.
You, it's not. You're maybe still not. Young, man. Like, you could still veer off.
Pivot again.
You could pivot, you know.
Pivot back.
Why not?
I could hit the hairpin turn and go back.
Why not? I mean, I like the idea of, like, one of the brightest minds we have in this world is Lemmy Hayes over
just like sitting just, around hitting so fucking drums.
It's so fucking bizarre. You know what I mean? Like, he knows about, like, Gretsch and rolling bombers and quantum physics.
Like, something like that.
I don't understand that shit. Like, maybe you could explain it to me off when we...
Yeah, I could give you the Reader's Digest. I mean, it was interesting to, like... It was definitely interesting to watch Interstellar because it was like, yeah, this was my class. This is,
yeah,
it's not exactly how it's described, but it's how you could begin to give some level of visualization to a concept that was it Buddy Rich that said if you can't, or whoever said that if you can't, it's not Buddy, whoever, if you can't read it, you probably can't play it.
Oh,
to a degree.
Oh, I thought it was if you can't think it.
Or... Think it or hear it or read it or whatever it is. It's okay. Like if you don't have the ability to conceive.
Because I was going
to
say, yeah, people can not read and play. Yes. So that can't be it.
Yes, but it's like if you can't even break it out right in this way.
Right.
Then you can't picture it, which is one of those like breakthrough developments that we all have as we develop object permanence and all that bullshit. But yeah, it is really bizarre to watch what they call like a sandbox where you have a four-dimensional sandbox and it's just like this ball will just disappear because that's the dimension of time that it's moving in that we can't perceive. It's very bizarre. It's tough to tough to get into.
Yeah.
So, but fun. I read some of it every once in a while, but you know, obviously big science fiction guy.
Yeah, no, this is good to know. This is good to know. I like this. We got it out. Because that's what I like about this show is like getting into the person of, you know, more obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Most people just think I play drums and like to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is true.
But you're not a fat bastard. So that's usually the sign, too, of someone who really likes to eat.
More of a soft corn.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Some guys are just like, I say it. I don't care. You're a little ruffled in the face. It's like, I get... So you like to eat, huh?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, what's good around here? Like, I'm going to ask you.
Yeah.
Because, like, you look like,
you're going to know.
You don't really look like the kind of guy, by the way, that I'd be like, so, Lemmy, like, you know.
I'll throw it down.
Well, but you keep it somehow. You're burning off those calories.
I mean, I guess maybe it's the drumming. Maybe it's the hauling of all the bullshit.
It could be the pallets.
The pallets.
The 32-inch, you know.
Oh, yes. The emotional baggage of... playing music.
Like I said, it's hard to be Phil Collins. And no, like all the different, like that, did you see that bitch, the money she took him for?
Oh, man.
I mean, Kevin Costner and him, like they can kvetch.
Yeah.
They can have a session and be like,
yeah,
dude.
Maybe they could hang out with Bezos.
It ain't worth it, bro. And by the way, Hal Blaine and another guy I won't mention, he told me, he was like, I'll just do the voice and you have to guess. He was like, Dave, no wait, hold on. I'm doing, that sounds like another guy. Hold on. I would love to, man. I would love to, but I'm so busy all the time. I got my kids like half the month and I just got to work all the time and support them. And I can't even have time to sit down with you, bro. I would love to, but I can't. If you can guess who that is, I don't know.
I think I know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but anyway, thank you, man.
Of course.
I'm so appreciative that you could come by and we finally met, man.
Yeah, I know. It's hilarious. It's hilarious for all the times we tried.
I know. It's historic.
Yes.
I love it, man. All the near misses and...
Oh, yes.
We finally made it happen. Brother.
That's right.
Thank you for everything and...
Of course.
I'm glad we could pull this off, man. Pleasure.